So this is webyeshiva.org, Rabbi Jeffrey Sachs, and we're continuing our discussion of the Rambam's Shmona Prakim. Erev Tov. I put up in the chat, I think the way it works is that you don't see the chat, that any chat that was up before you log in or something like that. So I'll put it up again. The Bodleian Library at Oxford just recently put up this site at harambam.org. There you go, at harambam.org, which is worth visiting. It's the manuscript of the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam, the what they call the autograph manuscript of the Mishneh Torah, is now fully available online. It's not the kind of text you'd sit and actually, like, you know, read from because of the, I guess, the calligraphy or the, you know, the gaping holes in the parchment and things like that, but it's definitely worth anyone that's interested in the study and teachings and life and meaning of the Rambam for us. It's something you want to see with your own eyes. So definitely take a visit to that website. It's a very nice website. It's very well designed, and they have information about the manuscript and about the Rambam and etc. So take a look at that, but not during class. We are now in the third perek of the Shmona Prakim, a rather short perek, a necessary perek, because it's really a bridge between chapters 1 and 2, and the essential, important, perhaps maybe even most important chapter in the work, chapter 4, which is quite lengthy. Hopefully we can get through all of chapter 3 tonight, and we'll probably have to dedicate more than one shiur to chapter 4. When we get to it. Until now, the Rambam's been giving us his diagnosis, his anatomy of the soul. I think that's what we called it. The different component parts of the human soul and how they work, how they interact, their culpability, their responsibility for our actions in different ways. That's what we talked about last time. And now the Rambam develops this metaphor. It's really, the whole thing is really something of an extended metaphor for the chole, the cholye hanefesh, the diseases of the soul. Since, as the Rambam described, the human soul is something of a very delicate machine of sorts, not to reduce it to such a kind of mechanistic sense. Oh, I'm sorry, I will turn my webcam on. I apologize for that. There you go. If you have your webcams, turn them on. Sorry about that. Where's everybody's webcams? There are only two people that have a webcam. Go out and get yourself a webcam. Okay. Not to reduce it to such a mechanistic kind of notion, because it's not a machine in the sense of I don't know that cheap printer that's sitting over there on the table. It's more like a fine antique watch. That's actually a pretty good metaphor. I have a clock over there. Let's see if I can show it to you. Over there in the corner, there's an old Navy clock that belonged to my grandfather. Pass me the clock. It's a fine piece of machinery. It's from World War II. It still works perfectly, although it's not. Although no, it does. It does work perfectly. It's an old Navy clock. If you're looking at the video, it's a pretty big thing. It must have hung on a wall someplace. I'm embarrassed to say it was probably pilfered off of a ship after World War II. And in the back, it has all these gears to wind it up with this key. You can hear it. Anyway, it's kind of precious to me. And then you set it. It's now 9:08, my son tells me, here in Yerushalayim. But there are also all these other little gadgets that we don't know about. We who have, like, you know, $5 stopwatches. In the back, there are all these other little gadgets and mechanisms and dials to speed up or slow down the passage of time. You know, that's a great plot for some science fiction movie, I'm sure. Because, in other words, the makers of the clock knew that, I guess when this clock was made at the beginning of the 20th century, it was not possible to make a clock that was completely 100% precise. So you'd be able to adjust the spring mechanisms, I guess, inside to make it go faster, to make it go slower, so that you'd be able to be michavein the clock so that it kept good time. I mean, in the old movies, you see people with their wristwatch saying that their wristwatch was running fast or running slow. Our clocks and watches don't suffer from those today. There's even one dial there where you can stop the clock, where you can like basically wind out the spring so that the clock stops ticking. Either because, I don't know, maybe in the Navy there were times when you needed to have a clock that wouldn't tick. I don't know, imagine some World War II movie where they're in the submarine and they have to go into complete silence because the Nazi ship is above them. Or they used to have this, I don't know, there was this custom. I don't know whether it was a Christian custom or where it comes from. Perhaps somebody can tell me. If is Alan Goldenberg on with it? No, he's not. He's always good to figure out what I'm about to say, Google it, and post it up before I actually say it. There was this practice, or minhag, as it were, that they used to have that if somebody died, the practice was to stop the clock, either so that you'd have a record of the precise time of death, or for some other mystical reasons that I don't know. This is not a Jewish custom. It seemed to be some kind of, maybe that was the reason. But this fancy clock that I have, this old Navy clock of my grandfather's, that's a better metaphor for the soul as mechanism. It's this very delicate instrument that sometimes goes out of whack. It sometimes stops telling time accurately. Its balance, if you imagine it like the metaphor of a fulcrum, of a teeter-totter, sometimes it goes out of balance. We'll come back to that metaphor of the balance of the fulcrum or the scale going out of balance, which becomes the central metaphor for the work of the soul. And that's what the Rambam is talking about here. So from the kind of very technical descriptions of chapter 1 and 2, now we roll up our sleeves and start talking about the work of tikkun hamidot, of repairing the soul, of repairing the personality. So the Rambam says, Amru ha-kadmonim, the ancients used to say, le-nefesh briut v'choli. The soul suffers from illness and disease and health and disease, kimosh leguf briut v'choli, just like the physical body is afflicted with illness, disease, as well as health, balance, wellness. The soul is the same thing. Now, that's a metaphor. The Rambam is not here talking about what we call today mental disease. Mental disease, mental illness, has an organic component. It's a disease like everything else, which can today be treated, to a very great extent, pharmacologically. Even depression, what the ancients used to call the marash chora, which might have had something to do with an imbalance in the humors, right? So now we know that depression has a very, very significant organic component to it. And that's why, if you take the right type and portion of this drug or that drug, Prozac or what have you, it can be treated. It can be. That's not what the Rambam is talking about. That kind of illness, mental illness with an organic element to it, that's Briyut HaGuf for the Rambam. Briyut HaNefesh has to do with what we call, colloquially, what we call the midot, your personality traits. We're not talking about depression. We're not talking about schizophrenia. We're not talking about anything else, right? Those mental illnesses go into the category of Briyut HaGuf, of physical well-being. Obviously, it's different than having an ingrown toenail, right? Within the realm of physical well-being, there are all different types of maladies that somebody might be afflicted with. But when we talk about Briyut HaNefesh, for the Rambam, that's not talking about mental health, even though, you know, there's a lot of discussion about Briyut HaNefesh, which colloquially is referred to as mental, what we call mental health. There's actually even an organization of Orthodox mental health professionals, which is called, the name of their organization is Nefesh, and they do very important work. But that's not what the Rambam is talking about here. Ubriyut HaNefesh, he, sheyu tchunoteha v'tchunot chalakeha, tchunot ta'aseh bahem, tamid hatovot v'chasedim v'apu'ulot hana'ot. Briyut HaNefesh, health of the soul, is that the components of the soul, the components of your personality, you should be doing the good things, you should be doing chesed, the righteous things, and the proper things. V'cholya, and the illness of the soul, is shiyu tchunoteha v'tchunot chalakeha tchunot shtaseh bahem tamid ha-ra'ot v'ha-psha'im v'ha-pulot ha-migunot. You do wrong things, you do wicked things, you do evil things, you do despicable things, unspeakable things. Amnam briyut haguf v'cholyo melechet ha-rafua tachkor al zeh. Kamo shechole ha-gufot yidamu lehefseid hargashatam b'mashu matok shu mar v'b'mashu mashu matok v'itzaru hana'ot b'tzurot bilti na'ot v'techazakta avatam v'tigdal hana'atam b'dvarim sh'ein hana'a b'hem klal l'briyutam ela efshar shiyu b'hem tzar k'achilat hatit v'pecham v'afar v'dvarim ha'afutzim me'od v'chamutzim me'od k'yotze b'elu min ha'mizonot asher lo yit'avu lahem b'riyut eile yimasu otam. Just like in physical health, I'm paraphrasing, I'm not translating word for word here. Just like in physical health, is somebody who's unwell, they're going to get all mixed up, and they're going to think that bitter food is sweet and sweet food is bitter, and they're ability to make judgments about those things are going to be off. Their whole system is going to be out of whack. You know, it's like, the Rambam is using medical notions, I guess, that were common in his day. These are also notions that he discusses in Hilchot Deot. I'm going to come back to Hilchot Deot in a minute. These were kind of, these were symptoms of illness that were common. Today we might say something like, somebody who's not well, they lose their appetite. Even though having an appetite is important, it's like important to eat when you're unwell, because you need your strength and you need your vitamins and you need all the good things that healthy food gives you. But that's a sign itself of illness that you don't want to, you know, take the food that's going to be helpful to you, which is why, you know, there's always like that sick person, and they're saying, not just the Yiddish Mama is saying, eat, tatala, eat, but, you know, they're always saying, eat, it's important, you have to keep up your strength. You know, these are all things that we've either said, or we've heard, or probably both. But the fact that the tatala doesn't want to eat, is it in and of itself a sign of their sickness, of their unwellness? And then the Rambam talks about even like to the degree that you'll eat things that are even bad for you. It's not just that you don't do what you're supposed to do to maintain your physical health, but you do things which are damaging to your health, and that in and of itself is a sign of sickness. And he describes people that are going to eat the inedible. You're going to eat coal or dust or dirt, or very acidic things, very sour things, etc., etc., etc. So similarly, Cain chole hanefashot. So again, these are all a metaphor. These are all metaphorically speaking, but he's saying similarly for the person that's suffering from a disease of the soul. Ritzoni lomar, ha'ra'im u'balei chesronot, yidameh lahem b'ma shehin ra'ot shehin tovot. So just like the person that's physically unwell is going to want to eat things that aren't healthy and is going to avoid things that are healthy, so too the person whose soul is damaged. He's going to desire to do things that are ra'ah, that are bad, and he's going to imagine that they're good. Uvama shehin tovot shehin ra'ot, and vice versa. Vehara yitaveh tamid lahaflagot. Evil always desires extremes. Haflagot, like peleg, like dor haflaga. You know, like we talk about the generation of the Migdal Bavel, of the Tower of Babel, as the dor haflaga. That shoresh, pei lamed gimel, means to divide. A peleg is a half. Like machloket has the shoresh chelek, a piece. So these are related shoreshim, at least in their meaning. Haflagot here means extremism, kitzoniut, right? Evil, ra, will always desire the extremes. Now, anybody that's learned any Rambam knows that for the Rambam, extremism is always bad. We will, Bezrat Hashem, next week, when we get into the fourth chapter, visit the famous teaching of the Rambam about the Shvil HaZahav, the golden path, the middle path, which avoids extremism between two extremes. But a sign of disease itself is wanting the extremes, wanting too much of it. We discussed this in the last weeks about Judaism's attitude towards consumption being one of moderation, being one of moderation. For the Rambam, moderation is essential. And the places where the Rambam is willing to consider moderation as insufficient are themselves the very rare exceptions to the rule, and say more about the rule than they do about the exceptions. The cases where the Rambam is willing to entertain a type of radical extremism, because they're exceptions, says a lot about what he thinks about those cases. Does anybody happen to know offhand what those cases are, where the Rambam says it's not sufficient to be moderate? Okay, well, we'll come to that. We'll come to that next week or the week after. So the inability to differentiate essentially primarily between tov v'ra, between good and evil, is itself an indication of choli hanefesh, of a disease of the soul. Ukimosha cholim, kasher yedu cholyam velo yedu melechet refuah. So just like somebody who has a fever, somebody who has the flu, a physical malady, unless they happen to be doctors themselves, who, you know, of course, always make the worst patients. So if they don't know medicine, yishalu harofim. So they'll ask a doctor. V'yodi'um ma ro'i shi'aseh. And by asking a doctor, by consulting with your doctor, you'll find out what to do. V'yezhiru mima shi'idamu arev v'yechrichum lakachat advarim ha'musim v'amarim ad shi'yavriu gufoteyem v'yashuvu livchor batov v'lamos b'mos. Right? And the doctor will prescribe, again, I'm paraphrasing, the doctor will prescribe the necessary course of treatment, and that's how they'll get better. Similarly, cholei hanefashot. So just like if you have a fever, you should go to a doctor, or you should, get some kind of medical attention if you need it. Similarly, chole hanefesh. Ro'ui lahem shi'ishalu, not the rofim, not the MDs, but the chachamim. The chachamim. Who are the chachamim? What's a chacham? No? Who are the chachamim? The wise guy. Okay. So the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot here in Masechet Avot. In Masechet Avot, there's this Mishnah in Avot. Shiva dvarim begolem v'shiva bechacham. The Rambam is describing the character traits of the chacham, the wise person, versus a golem. A golem is not, we're not talking about the Maharal's golem, you know, the Frankenstein, but a golem is probably like somebody who's not a chacham. It's probably like a moron. So he describes the characteristic traits of the character traits of the chacham. And then in this commentary to the Mishnah, the Rambam says, "Ani Afaresh Tchila." This is a Perek Hay, either Mishnah Vav or Zayin. You know, there are different traditions sometimes on how to count the Mishnayot in Avot. So from version to version of the Mishnah, you might be one Mishnah off. And as if you're sometimes looking for a Mishnah in Avot, like if you see a Mishnah in Avot referenced someplace, and it'll tell you that it's Mishnah, it's Perek Hay, Mishnah Zayin, Chapter 5, Mishnah 7, and you go to your, I don't know, the Art Scroll Sitter, let's say, that has the Pirkei Avot in it after Shabbat Mincha, which, you know, most Sidurim have Avot printed after Shabbat Mincha, or you go to the Mishnah, or you go to wherever it is that you look up a Mishnah in Avot, and the Mishnah that you saw referenced in whatever it was that you're now going to look up the Mishnah, it's not there. So what do you do? So it's always a good guess to look one before or one after, because there are different traditions on how to break up these Mishnayot in some of the Prakim. So this is one of the cases. On the CD that I took this from, it's Mishnah Zayin, but in the Rambam's commentary, it's Mishnah Vav. And it took me a second to find what I was looking for because of this problem. So in this commentary on the Mishnah, the Rambam lists the different characteristics of the Chacham, and he says Chacham, or he explains what these different things are. The Rambam says, Chacham hu ha'ish asher higi'o lo shnei haminim min hamalot al hashlemut kemo shero'oi. She'chacham yu lo elu shiva hamalot vehein ikarim gdolim. Etc. So for the Rambam, the idea that the different ma'alot, we talked last time about the moral ma'alot and the intellectual ma'alot, the difference between obedience and virtue. A chacham is somebody that's mastered these both. Now, sometimes in the Rambam talks about chachamim, he's talking about the rabbanim, the rabbis. Although it's possible that all chachamim are in possession of that Torah knowledge, but possession of Torah knowledge itself does not ipso facto make you a chacham. It might be a prerequisite, but not the definition, if you understand what I'm saying. So the Rambam says, if you're sick, if you have a broken bone, you go to a rofe. If you have a broken soul, if there's something wrong with your virtue, so then you have to go to a chacham. Asher heim rofe anifashot. They are the physicians of the soul. V'yazhirum meotan haraot asher yach shavun hatovot. And the Chacham will make a prescription. as he's going to explain in the fourth in the upcoming fourth chapter, the Chacham will make a prescription, will make a diagnosis first, then we'll make a prescription, and we'll help you get your balance back. Right? In other words, like the clock that we talked about earlier, we'll help you do that kind of fine tuning so that you're keeping good time. That your reflection, your actions become a reflection of a well balanced precision. The machinery should be running well. Aval chole hanefashot asher lo yargishu becholyam. Admitting you have a problem is always the first step. But what happens sometimes? So if you have a broken bone, you tend to know it. If you have a fever, you tend to know it. There are other diseases of the body that lie in wait. You don't always know. And on the contrary, sometimes, you know, unfortunately, when you have a symptom, you know, they say this, Rahman al-Itzlan, about certain types of cancers. By the time you have a symptom, it means you're really in trouble. And that the disease was growing and spreading inside of you before, you know, while you were asymptomatic. And by the time the symptoms, you know, start to show themselves, that's a sign of a very advanced stage. But in the regular case of medicine, you have a symptom, you know about it. But with chole hanefesh, like certain types of physical diseases, you don't always know that you're sick. You don't always know that something is wrong, or you're not always willing to recognize it or to admit it. So if you're unaware of your illness, your metaphysical illness, v'yidamuhu bri'ut, and you imagine yourself to be well, o yargishu bo velo yitrapu, or you're aware of your problem, but for whatever reason you refuse to seek the healing, achritam tieh kachrita chole asher yamshech achar anotam velo yitrape. So it's the same as somebody that doesn't take their medicine. Right? Somebody that's physically ill but refuses to be healed, refuses to seek treatment, refuses to follow the course of treatment, so he's gonna die. Shehu yamud bli safek. So the same thing with the chole hanefesh, that you have to take your medicine. Yes. Amnam, however, otam amargishim v'nimshachim acharan otam, amar bahem ha-sefer amiti. What's the sefer amiti? What's the sefer amiti? Is the Torah. Misaper divrehem ki b'shrut libi elech. That's the warning in Parshat Nitzavim. That's the warning in Parshat Nitzavim, that an arrogant person will... And again, for the Rambam, arrogance is the worst midah, or is tied for the worst midah. I mean, I'll give it away. I mentioned earlier, in the case of arrogance, the Rambam thinks it's not sufficient to walk a moderate course. That arrogance is a particularly, particularly dangerous midah, and you have to be an extremist in distancing yourself from arrogance. But there's a type of spiritual arrogance where somebody says, "Bishrirut libi eilech," I know what I'm doing, right? I know what's best for me. With the arrogance of heart, you're going to conduct yourself. Ritzoni lomar shehu yitkaven leravot tzamo v'hu yosif latzmo tzama. Right? He's thirsty, and he's going to make himself more thirsty. Right. In other words, you're going to dig your hole. It's just a way for the Roman to say you're going to dig your hole even deeper. V'amnam otam she'enam margishim hirba Shlomo l'saper aleihem. We have a few psukim here from Sefer Mishlei. Shlomo says in Proverbs, derech evil yashar be'inav v'shomea le'etza chacham, that the wicked person, so everything that he does is yashar be'inav, right? The person who's spiritually diseased, has a justification and thinks that everything he's doing is correct, but a chacham, right, will listen to etzah, will be open to suggestion, will be open to correction. You know, people are not, you know, it's such an arrogant trait that so many of us have, that, you know, somebody, whether they're a friend, whether they're completely properly motivated, or there's some kind of mixture in of their own problems, you know, somebody will point out a flaw to you. Someone will point out a flaw to you. So what's your first reaction? What's most people's first reaction when somebody points out a flaw? Right, to explain why they're wrong, or to explain why they're flawed, or what have you. That's a sign of error at best, evil at worst. But a smart person listens to etzah. It doesn't mean that you have to do whatever everybody tells you, but you have to be open to the Mishnah Avos describes the Memchest Drochim Shatorah Niknet, the attitudes that somebody has, or the traits that a person has to have in order to really acquire, make an acquisition on Torah. And one of those traits is ohev et hatochachot, which means that you have to be receptive to being told that what you're doing is wrong. If you're not open to criticism, you're never going to improve yourself. You're never going to grow. And this is essential. At this point in the Shmona Prakim, it's very subterranean. The Rambam's not saying this explicitly, but it will return in a more explicit way, that there's a very significant communal aspect going on here, that personality development and self-improvement do not happen on a desert island or in a vacuum, that part, one of the tools in improving oneself has to do with the benefits of human interaction. Human interaction with chachamim, with people who are better than us, who are smarter than us, who are themselves more refined and can help us chart a course to our own growth. But also from peer interaction, that our peers, that our friends, that our family are able to hold up a mirror to us and help us see our own flaws, even though they themselves may also be flawed, even though they themselves also have work to do. But that doesn't mean that they can't serve as this type of mirror onto ourselves. And, you know, every interaction, every relationship, in different ways, some more profound, in most cases, sometimes very superficially, but our relationships with other people, spouses, children, parents, family, colleagues, what have you, are all meant to be opportunities for us to learn about ourselves, as well as lots of other things. There are opportunities for us to help other people. There are opportunities for us to do chesed for other people. There are opportunities for learning. There are opportunities for all types of things. But one of the things that we're meant to get out of our relationships with other people is an opportunity to see ourselves, to understand ourselves a little better. And we don't always take advantage of that. And that is this between the lines here, the Rambam is making this point about Shomea Le'etza Chacham. It's implicit that you are interacting with someone else. But if three people call you a mule, it's time to look for the reins. That's a TLA. Is that your expression, or is that something you learned on the farm? Right, Lee, that's very correct. There's a Mishnah in Avos that says, Ezehu chacham halomed mikol adam. that you learn from everyone. That mission is usually interpreted in the kind of intellectual sense that you learn that there's a lot of knowledge out there, and you gather knowledge from everyone. But also halomed mikol adam, correct? That you learn from everyone in this kind of on the interpersonal level. Ritzono lomar, the Rambam says, Hashomei la'atzachacham shiyodeyu derech asher hu yeshar be'emet v'lo asher yachshaveu hu yeshar. As we explained. V'amar yesh derech yeshar lifnei ish v'achrita darkei mavet. V'amar b'chol yanafashot alalo b'yotam bilti yodim ma yazikem u'ma yo'ilem derech rishayim ka'afila lo yedu b'ma yikashelu. Right, the metaphor of the darkness, that part of wickedness is to be walking the dark path and to not even know what you're going to trip over. The literal case of the michshol lifnei iver, which sometimes we place for ourselves. In other words, you know, the Torah says, lifnei iver lo titein michshol. You shouldn't put a stumbling block before the blind. Which is not only the literal blind, but you shouldn't do things to cause someone else to fall. Sometimes we do this to ourselves, because we simply just don't turn on the lights and end up smashing our shin on the night table or whatever it may be. But not literally turning on the lights, but here spiritually turning on the lights that we. We don't even know how we're messing ourselves up because we don't stop to take a look. The Rambam says the actual work of how you do this improvement will be discussed in the fourth chapter, and this is the end of the chapter. This kind of extended development of the metaphor of using the medical metaphor to describe personality development. The Rambam here in Hilchot Deot, I just want to learn these two halachot with you. Again, let's just remember the chronology. The Rambam wrote our text, the Shmona Prakim, in his relative youth. The commentary on the Mishnah, of which this is a part of, was completed by the time the Rambam was 30. The Rambam, again, is born in 1135, probably. There's some debate on that, but that's the date that's conventionally given, so let's stick with it. The Rambam was born in 1135. He dies in 1205. The great work of his middle age is the Mishneh Torah, the Yad HaChazakah, the Rambam's great code of Jewish law, the Mishneh Torah. The first of the 14 books of the Mishneh Torah is Sefer Mada, the Book of Wisdom, sometimes translated as. The Book of Wisdom, the Sefer Mada, is divided into different sections. Together we've studied some of them. We've learned Hilchot Tshuva together. In different contexts, we've looked at pieces from Hilchot Yisodei HaTorah, the Rambam's great philosophical work, etc. Hilchot Deot, which I think I just mentioned, is sometimes best translated as often translated as the Book of Opinions, but it's best translated as the Book of Personality Traits. Because again, for the Rambam, Mada, De'a, wisdom, knowledge, opinion, these are the personality traits. So Hilchot De'ot is the halachic text which is most closely parallel to our Shmona Prakim. And I mean, there are many pieces that are literal just cut and paste from the Shmona Prakim to the Hilchot Deot. But here in the sixth chapter of Hilchot Deot, the Rambam says, Derech Briyoto Shel Adam Liot Nimshach B'deotav Masav Achar Re'av V'chaverav. It's human nature. Derech Briyoto Shel Adam. It's human nature that a person is influenced by the opinions and actions of his friends and colleagues and relatives and the people around him. No, hey, kiminhag anshei medinato. And people tend to be influenced by their surroundings, by their environment, and to act like the norms of their society. Lefichach, tzarich adam lehitchaber letzadikim veleshev etzel chachamim tamid. And therefore, it's imperative that a person joins up lehitchaber to the righteous folk and to live amongst wise people always. Kadesh yilmod min, and distance himself from the wicked who walk in darkness. Again, that metaphor of wickedness being darkness or absence of light. Kadesh, so you have to, peer group is essential. Peer group is essential, that you we want you to be connected to the righteous, the wise, and distance yourself from the evil, so that you may learn from the good ways and avoid the bad ways. V'hu she'Shlomo Amar, this is what Shlomo in Mishlei says, Holech et chachamim yachkim, v'roek, that if you hang out with the smart people, you become smart, and if you hang out with the wicked people, you become wicked. V'omer ashrei ish asher, that the first pasuk in Tehillim, ashrei ish asher lo halach b'atzat resha'im. V'chein im haya b'medina sheminhagoteha ra'im ve'ein anashim holchim b'derek yishara. So if you live in a place which is evil, where people aren't doing the right thing, you can't stay there, because you're going to be influenced by them. Tzadikim. So you should go to a place where the people are righteous, tovim, and can surround yourselves with the right kind of peer group. V'im hayu kol ha'medinot shmuatan kimo, and if every society that you could go to is no good, the Rambam says, like in our time. So if he's saying that about the 12th century, imagine what he would say about the 21st. Oh, she'eno yachol alechet lemedina sheminagoteha tovim, mipnei hagayasot, or mipnei acholi. Or if it's not possible, if you're aware that there are good places, you just can't get there for whatever reason. So what should you do? Yeshev levado yechidi. So you should sit alone. You should become Robinson Crusoe. Now, this is remarkable, because again, for the Rambam, social interaction, living in society, is essential on so many different planes. Like we saw a moment ago, that human interaction is itself a key ingredient in personal growth, but that's given the assumption that you can find the right type of people. And if you can't, it's better to live the life of a hermit. V'im hayu ra'im v'chata'im she'ein min manichim otah leyoshev b'medina ela im kein nit'arev imahen v'noheg b'minhagam hara yatzah le'maarot u'lechochim le'midbarot v'al yanhig atzmo b'derech chata'im k'inyan she'nemar mi'itneinu b'minbar malon acharim. That's a good question, Tilalaya. How do you know? How do you know that they're right? How do you know that you're right and they're wrong? Sometimes you know. No. In other words, if you're living in Nazi Germany and you look around and you see what's going on, to say this is wrong is not arrogance. Now, obviously, that's a cheap example for me to bring, because it is so extreme. And the Rambam might be painting an oversimplified picture of complete evil or complete righteousness. And in reality, the Rambam himself was aware that usually it's a little more complex than that, and there are usually shades of gray. And he might be formulating it this way for the purpose of No. For the purpose of getting at the underlying principle. But that ability to make value judgments about the society in which you live is apparently, for the Rambam, an important ability to develop. Although he doesn't here address how you should do that. The second halacha here is mitzvat aseh lidabek b'chachamim v'talmideihem. Kedei lilmod mimaseihem kinyan shneemar uvo tidbak. Now this is interesting. Hold on a second. Lee, you write, if you do have to distance yourself from everyone, become a hermit, then it seems that good and bad become irrelevant anyway. Well, yes and no. First of all, it's not clear that, the Rambam really thought that, that was a practical... Again, it could be the Rambam is stating an extreme case, in order to explicate an underlying principle. But even if one were to become that kind of spiritual Robinson Crusoe and go off to the desert island to be alone, on the contrary, it's even more important to maintain a sense of good and bad, because in isolation, you lose all touchstone. That's probably a theme in literature and in film. Think of any case you have of any, or even in real life, of people that are in isolation, in solitary confinement, and the necessity to, the severely damaging, potential of being in complete isolation on a person's psyche. I mean, this is written about, this is well documented. And what you have to do, if you read, for example, if you read Sharansky's biography of his time in, I think it's called Fear No Evil, he describes, the years that he was in isolation when he was in the Soviet prison, what he would do in order to keep his mind just to keep from going insane. And he, for him, he was a very accomplished chess player. So he describes that he would, I think two things. One is that he had learned a certain number of prakim of Tehillim Ba'al Peh. That was something that had a special meaning for him. And he would recite those. And the other was chess. He was a fairly accomplished chess player. I think he still is. And he, in his mind, would play chess games. He would replay famous chess games. He would invent chess games in his head in order to keep his, not just his sanity, because that becomes essential to maintaining that sense of right and wrong and maintaining that sense of your sense of balance, and otherwise you just completely lose everything. So that's among the reasons why moving to the desert island becomes a complete last resort for the Rambam, because it in and of itself constitutes a danger. Yes, no, clearly for the Rambam, if it's ever a case of all things being equal, surrounded by a completely evil society, or being in spiritual isolation, I don't know if it's spiritual isolation, being in isolation from society, so the latter is preferable to the former, but try to find a third way. His first option is move to a place where you're surrounded by chachamim. Or at least where you have access to them, if not complete. I mean, when the Rambam says "kemo bizmanenu," even in our time, things are really bad. So the Rambam's aware there's never a time, there's never been a society, where everybody was righteous, where everybody was a tzaddik, where everybody was a chacham. In history, there just simply was never a time like that. Even Avram Avinu, he had Lot, and in the Midbar, there they were, around Har Sinai. Hashem is giving the Torah, and things are going wrong. So the Rambam was aware of this, so that these kinds of typologies that he's putting forth, he realizes these are kind of pure constructs, but that in real life, it's always more complicated. The Rambam here is concerned with this notion. You know, there's a mitzvah of dvekut. The Torah says that we have to cleave unto God. Dvekut. Dvekus, like they say. What they used to, that famous Jewish music group, Dvekus, about the connection that we have to God. So how do you literally glue yourself to God? You know, for the Rambam, that's a difficult proposition because God being incorporeal is a pretty big notion for the Rambam. So how do you literally attach yourself to God? So you do it through, right? The Rambam says, "V'chi efshar la'adam lidabek b'shchina." Can you literally cling to the divine presence? Ela kachamru chachamim b'feirusha mitzvah zu tidbak b'chachamim v'talmidehem. Now this, we have to be very careful. This is not some kind of Catholic notion that the Chacham or the Rabbi is an intermediary for us. But it's more like the image of a ladder and how appropriate it is. Here we are standing a few hours before Parshat Vayetse, which talks about the Sulam, the bridge between earth and heaven. Malachim olim v'yordim ba, the angels are ascending and descending on it. So for the Rambam, this notion is probably closer to that of a ladder. There are some people that are a few rungs higher than us. Not necessarily because they're more inherently holy. There is no such thing as inherent holiness in Judaism. We all start out with the same potential. The Rambam actually says that in Hilchot Teshuvah, that everybody has the potential to be as great as Moshe Rabbeinu himself, or as wicked as Yerovam ben Nevat, as the lowest of the low. And free will and your own ability to work hard and to develop yourself is the only ingredient that will determine where you end up. But you know what? There are people that have made the journey, either because they got a head start, they've been at it longer than you have, or they worked harder than you did, or what have you. And you, if you connect yourself to them, you can piggyback, as it were, to help you get up the ladder. Now, just to end with a thought on the Parsha, so for the Rambam, that's the goal of the Chacham. The goal of the Chacham are our connecting ourselves to the Chacham for the Rambam is a way to piggyback and get closer to Hashem because they know Hashem better than we do. They're not closer to Him. They're not more beloved by Him. They're not. They've just figured it out a little more. And if you hang out with them, the piggybacking works. Again, we're talking about the Rambam here, so there's an intellectual component going on, that you will amass yeda, yidi'ah, knowledge of Hashem. So just to end with a thought on the Parsha, but to keep it within the Rambam, in the Mor Nevuchim, at the beginning of the Mor Nevuchim, in a context of trying to explain some of the etymologies of certain words and phrases, particularly anthropomorphic phrases in the Torah, phrases that might make it seem like Hashem has a body, let's say, but to explain why he doesn't really have a body. So in the 15th chapter, in Mor Nevuchim, section 1, book 1, chapter 15, the Rambam says, what's going on here with this ladder? It says that the Malachim Olim V'Yordim. They're going up the ladder and they're coming down the ladder. So the Rambam says it doesn't make sense. It should say, Yordim. Because where the Malachim, where the angels started, the angels are up in Shemayim, whatever that means. So they start up, they come down, and when they're done, they go back up. So instead of saying that they're going up and then down, it should say that they're coming down and then they're going up. This reminds me of something my daughter asked me when she was a little girl. We were at my in-laws, and my in-laws had one of these paintings of Sulam Yaakov, of Jacob's dream, of the ladder, and the angels going up and down. And in the paintings, the angels always have wings. So my daughter asked me, if they have wings, why do they need a ladder? It's a good question. The Rambam says that the pasuk is stated this way in order to emphasize that the ascent up the ladder of knowledge of God, built into the ascent is descent. Built into the notion that you're going to climb up rung after rung after rung comes with it a moral obligation to be aware of those that are behind you, and to know that if you know something, that means that you have an obligation to teach it. That if you've achieved something in the spiritual realm, it's your job to share it and to help influence others. Now, this is, an essential notion. Here we are, wherever we may be, in the most far out places on some Hawaiian island or who knows what, to remember that all of us here, that we are in the elite of the elite of the realm of Jewish knowledge, that we know more, unfortunately, tragically, than I don't know, 90% of the Jewish world, that doesn't know an aleph from a bet, that all of this idea, they've never heard of the Rambam, they've never heard of the Mishneh Torah, the Shmona Prokim. They don't, they people that just, they don't know anything. So the fact that we are able to learn, the fact that we have whatever achievements we have in our own religious life, there's a moral obligation that we have to try to share that with other people. Now, there are different ways to do this. There are different strategies to do this. People of good faith can debate how this can be done, how this should be done. We're not all meant to become Chabad shlichim and to go out and do it that way. There are different ways to do it. But the Rambam says that's what going up the ladder is about. Going up the ladder, built into that, is a knowledge that you have to be concerned with all the people that are below you on the ladder. So it's Olim and then Yordim. I think last semester we talked about Plato's metaphor of the cave and how that is reminiscent of what the Rambam says here and is not. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Google Plato cave. You'll find, more information than you need. And it's interesting to think how this metaphor and that metaphor are the same and are different. But I'll leave that to you to do that work. So for the Rambam tonight, the Rambam discussed how we should chase after the Chacham, that it's obligatory on us. It's obligatory on us to Tilalei, if you can post that link to that YouTube version, that'd be helpful. It's obligatory on us to find the Chachamim and to connect to them and to learn from them. But if you look at the entire corpus of what the Rambam is talking about, the Chacham himself also has obligations to be concerned with us folk who have not yet gotten there. So that's the third chapter, and next week we'll move on to the fourth chapter, which starts to describe the work of how this happens and how it plays itself out, and how we can begin to do that work of healing, of the of the diseased neshama. Shabbat Shalom.